corruption that ultimately will be used against, well, people like you, the Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris, against Reverend Barber, people, other people protesting, but this being done in the name of stopping an insurrection of Trump supporters?
Yes, indeed. I mean, what we are seeing in states across the country and on a federal level is a whole wave of anti-protest bills that are about targeting folks that are coming forward, not to tear this society down, but for what we're calling a moral resurrection. And indeed, right now, folks should be very aware of these anti-protest laws and of the way they're being used, you know, to deny voting rights, to you know, crack down on protesters that are calling out things like Line 3, just a whole host of the issues that are on this program today and every day are the very things that are under attack. When actually what we need is to defend a democracy and defend our civil liberties and have the right to say what's not right. That's going on, and then to build a movement to do something about
again, it. Again, our condolences, and thanks so much for being with us, Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris, co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe.
Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a volunteer coordinator. Our volunteer coordinator is responsible for maintaining KBOO's volunteer management systems, day-to-day coordination of volunteers, and the onboarding of new volunteers. Applications are due by July 26th. For a complete job description and instructions on how to apply, visit kboo.fm/employment. KBOO is an affirmative action and equal opportunity employer.
Join KBOO every Friday at 5:30 p.m. for Counterspin, a show that provides a critical examination of major media stories and exposes what the mainstream media missed. Counterspin exposes and highlights censored stories, sexism, racism, and homophobia in the news, the power of corporate influence, gaffes and goofs by leading TV pundits, and more. That's every Friday at 5:30 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a citizen group urges Portland police to change their crowd control tactics. The bootleg fire has a 40% containment, and the Cleveland baseball team changes its name. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, July 23rd, 2021. I'm Sam Bowman. A citizen advisory group is urging sweeping changes in the Portland police's response to protests. They say Portland police should permanently ban the use of tear gas and chemical weapons for crowd control. They say officers should wear their ordinary patrol uniforms when dealing with protesters instead of, quote, riot gear. The group also recommends that using force against civilians should only be as a last resort. The new report is by the Citizen Review Committee's work group that evaluates crowd control and use of force. The committee hears appeals of officer misconduct and examines police policies. The Portland police used force against protesters at least 6,000 times during racial justice protests last year, which has sparked dozens of lawsuits and already a few cash settlements with the city. The report is partially informed by public forums and online surveys that the committee held last year. The report urges Portland cops to give, quote, real-time, calm, and clear warnings and directions, not recorded messages about what the police will do next. That could be in order to disperse or relocate, or else face tear gas or riot cops bull-rushing the crowd. The report also says police need to stop firing weapons into crowds and kettling protesters and bystanders. Kettling refers to when the police tear gas a crowd, then surround and detain a large group of people while they are disoriented from the chemical weaponry. Portland police have stopped using tear gas since a federal judge barred the practice, but they still use other chemical agents, like pepper spray, on protesters. The Citizen Review Committee will present these recommendations to City Council on September 22nd. The Bootleg Fire burns over 400,000 acres and now ranks as the third largest wildfire in Oregon's history. The blaze in the Fremont-Winema Forest is now 40% contained. It was lit by a lightning strike on July 6th. Fire officials have seen some positive signs since for the past couple of days, the fire has only grown by about 1,000 acres per day. That said, warm weather and decreasing humidity in the next couple days, plus extremely dry fuel, means the fire will continue to spread towards the east and northeast. Over 2,000 firefighters are currently working on containing the fire. On Thursday, 9 firefighters tested positive for COVID-19, which qualifies as a workplace outbreak with the Oregon Health Authority. Those who tested positive and anyone with symptoms or their close contacts will be isolating until full results come in. Last weekend, one firefighter in the Bootleg Fire got separated from his crew and spent 3 hours alone in the blaze. He was reportedly not lost, but had to move in the opposite direction of his crew in order to keep himself safe. He was later able to hike to the road to a waiting ambulance. Another troubling aspect of the Bootleg Fire, the blaze has spread through at least a fifth of the trees set aside for carbon offsets in the Klamath East Forest. Carbon offsets are purchased by companies or individuals, and they preserve the forest from getting cut down. These trees are a carbon offset because they sequester the carbon dioxide that is a major greenhouse gas contributor. There is some debate as to how meaningful carbon offsets are, especially for large corporations. A Level 3 Go Now evacuation order is in place for areas of Lake County and Klamath County. There are evacuation shelters for people displaced at the Daly Middle School Auditorium in Lakeview, at the Klamath County Fairgrounds in Klamath Falls, and at Lapine Middle School. Oregon reported 613 more cases of coronavirus today and 2 new deaths. The state death toll now stands at 2,836. 178 Oregonians are hospitalized with the virus, and 45 are in intensive care units. Cases are back on the rise in Oregon, but state officials have no plans of reinstating coronavirus restrictions. County governments are being encouraged by the state to put temporary measures in place to slow the spread. Oregon Health Authority Director Patrick Allen said, quote, "A localized pandemic demands effective localized public health interventions, not a statewide response," end quote. Allen encouraged states with low vaccination rates to take action, and the governor has strongly suggested that counties put mask mandates and physical distancing requirements in place. This is less than a month after Governor Brown lifted all statewide coronavirus restrictions on June 30th. Current case numbers and hospitalization rates are lower than their peaks last year, but there is a key difference. Those affected are almost exclusively people who have chosen not to be vaccinated since the shots became universally available. About 71% of adults in Oregon have been fully or partially vaccinated against COVID. Josephine, Morrow, and Umatilla counties have the lowest vaccination rates, and in Umatilla County, they are now seeing the highest case rates per capita in the state. A federal appeals court decision this week not to allow Indiana to remove voters from the rolls without notifying them is a step in the right direction, according to groups working to protect voting rights. They also urged the state and Congress to pass legislation expanding access, not restricting it. KBOO's Emma Grillo has the story.
Voting rights advocates applaud this week's federal appeals court decision to prevent Indiana from purging some voters from the rolls without notifying them first. However, they say there's more work to do to ensure everyone has access to a ballot. Two Indiana state laws since 2017 aimed to remove a voter's registration if it appears they'd registered in another state. The NAACP's Indiana State Conference President Barbara Bowling Williams says neither held up in court because they violated the National Voter Registration Act.
the federal act requires that there is contact with the voter, you know, to say, it appears that you're registered in Ohio. Is that you? Have you moved to Ohio and you no longer, you know, going to be registered to vote here in Indiana?
If a voter doesn't respond, officials need to give notice that the person is set to be removed from the rolls and then wait two federal election periods. Bolene Williams says other policies, like same-day registration, have increased access in other states, but Indiana's voter registration period ends 30 days before Election Day. Legal battles around voter purges and other laws restrict voting access, especially for historically marginalized communities, are not unique to Indiana. As of July 14th, 18 states had passed 30 laws making it harder to vote in 2021 alone, according to the Brennan Center for Justice. Proponents say they're meant to prevent fraud, but Bolene Williams says lawmakers aren't taking voters' needs into account.
In this climate of not wanting people to vote, basically we understand that if everybody has an opportunity to vote, then the will of the people will reign and not the dictatorship of a few.
Indiana Senators Mike Braun and Todd Young were among those who blocked federal legislation, the For the People Act, which would have prevented many of the new, more restrictive state laws from going into effect. For KBOO News and the Public News Service, I'm Emma Grillo.
Drama is building in the House of Representatives over who will serve on the panel investigating the January 6th Capitol insurrection. With that story and more, it's Mary Sherman with 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
This is deadly serious. This is about our Constitution. It's about our country.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi stands by her decision to keep two Republicans, Indiana's Jim Banks and Ohio's Jim Jordan, off the committee investigating the January 6th Capitol riot, arguing the pair who voted against certifying the 2020 election results threatened the investigation's integrity. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy accused Pelosi of playing politics.
To say that the ranking member of judiciary who would have jurisdiction cannot serve. When she decides that Jim Banks, who served his nation in the Navy in Afghanistan, that he can't serve here.
Liz Cheney of Wyoming is the lone Republican on the panel, which holds its first meeting Tuesday. Speaking of partisan divides, a Senate committee voted 10-10 along party lines for National Wildlife Federation advisor Tracy Stone Manning to lead the Bureau of Land Management. Majority Leader Chuck Schumer will break the tie, signing the nomination to the full chamber. A new Senate bill would hold tech platforms accountable for allowing health misinformation to spread during public health emergencies. U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy says falsehoods about COVID-19 are behind vaccine hesitancy and contends it must be stopped.
That includes asking everyone to raise their own bar for sharing health information by checking to make sure that it's backed by credible scientific sources. As we say in the advisory, if you're not sure, don't share.
House Minority Whip Steve Scalise, Republican of Louisiana, who just got his first COVID vaccine dose this week, led the GOP Doctors Caucus to promote the safety and effectiveness of the vaccine on Thursday. The group also called for an investigation into the origins of COVID-19 and accused China and Speaker Pelosi of covering up the facts.
This is an evil virus. It's killed over 600,000 Americans, millions worldwide, and yet Speaker Pelosi refuses to hold a hearing on how this started.
A Pelosi spokesman criticized the group for not encouraging vaccinations and noted the House Intelligence Committee and the White House are investigating the origins of the virus. The Senate Armed Services Committee voted to increase the Pentagon's budget by $25 billion more than Biden's $715 billion proposal, which Republicans argued was insufficient in the face of global threats from China and Russia. Many on the left have sought to stem rising defense spending. President Biden signed a bill Thursday to increase funding for victim compensation and assistance through the Crime Victims Fund, which supports state-level programs. And days after a federal judge ruled the DACA program is unlawful and blocked new applicants, Vice President Kamala Harris met with DACA recipients at the White House. Harris said the administration will fight for a pathway to citizenship.
We are unequivocal that we recognize you for the Americans that you are, and that we recognize that you deserve all the rights that come with American citizenship.
Democrats are expected to include immigration reforms in an upcoming $3.5 trillion spending package, which is expected to be pushed through reconciliation. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines. At 6, it's Let's Talk About Race. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be clear skies with a low of 64. Tomorrow's weather, the sunny weather continues with a high of 91 degrees. Today in history, in 1903, the Ford Motor Company sold its first car. The quote of the day is from Carl Benz, the inventor of the first practical motor car. He said, quote, "My first customer was a lunatic. My second had a death wish," end quote. A plan is coming into place for a Lake Superior tribe to have their lands returned and a reburial site created for the deceased who were displaced a century ago by the construction of steel infrastructure. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. More than a century ago, nearly 200 Ojibwe graves were removed from the burial grounds of a Lake Superior tribe to make way for U.S. Steel's plan to develop ore docks that were never built. Now a new effort seeks to return those lands and a reburial site to the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Danielle Kading reports.
Wisconsin Point is a remote strip of land on the shore of Lake Superior. It marks the ancestral home of the Fond du Lac tribe, whose relatives settled there as early as 400 years ago. Seven generations were laid to rest at the Wisconsin Point Cemetery, including the community's leader, Chief Joseph Osagi. The company uprooted the dead and those still living, like Colleen Aird's parents. Aird, who is 97, is a direct descendant of Chief Osagi.
It's hallowed ground to me. We just loved it.
Aird says her father would be thrilled to see the lands turned over to the tribe. They're one step closer to that goal after the Superior City Council passed a resolution supporting the transfer. Fond du Lac Chairman Kevin Dupie says returning the lands would provide some closure to tribal families.
No matter what happened in the past, it's in our laps, and we have to take care of it and just continue to move forward.
City and tribal officials will work with Wisconsin U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin's office to petition the U.S. Department of Interior to place the lands in federal trust for Fond du Lac. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading.
Wynonna LaDuke was released from custody Thursday. She was arrested Monday with a group of women who sat in lawn chairs at the Shell River near Park Rapids, Minnesota, in opposition of Line 3 pipeline construction. LaDuke is leader of the environmental group Honor the Earth. Videos and photos posted on social media by Honor the Earth show the standoff between the women and officers. LaDuke spoke after her release Thursday in a live stream video outside a county sheriff's office.
Having spent three nights for being a water protector and standing on the easement with six other women, or sitting on the easement, I want to say we're going to keep fighting Enbridge. Is wrong that they steal the water. It's not patriotic, Governor Walz, to give the water, the land, and our civil rights to a Canadian multinational. And I'm really grateful to be out of jail today in Aiken County, and hope I don't see the inside for a little while, but who knows.
Hundreds of people have been arrested in the movement against the replacement project of Line 3, which will transport oil from Canada to Wisconsin. Demonstrations ramped up last year as the company Enbridge started construction of the pipeline. Supporters point to jobs and an economic boost. Those in opposition are concerned about impacts to water and the environment and are calling on the Biden administration to stop the pipeline. The National Congress of American Indians is commending the announcement by the Cleveland Major League Baseball team on its new name and mascot. The team will be named the Guardians. The announcement was made Friday by the team in a video message on Twitter and comes after last year's decision to retire the Indians' name and mascot. NCAI President Fawn Sharp says it's another important step in healing for Native people from the harms of mascots. NCAI is continuing to call on other professional sports teams and schools to drop their Indian mascots. Navajo Nation lawmakers met with a Cherokee Nation delegation this week in Window Rock, Arizona. As the Navajo Council began its summer session, they discussed a proposed treaty between the two nations to support one another. 25 years ago, treaty discussions began. Navajo Council members say the proposed agreement between the two largest tribes in the country would help with COVID-19 recovery and future issues. Gifts were exchanged to show appreciation for each tribe. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Cleveland deliberated for months on a new name for its baseball team, and finally one has been chosen. Starting next year, the team will be known as the Cleveland Guardians. KBOO's Josh Salem has more on the story.
Cleveland's baseball team is changing its name to the Cleveland Guardians after the 2021 season. The team announced last year it would be moving away from its previous name, which was an outdated and incorrect term that evoked Native Americans. The team surveyed 40,000 fans and considered more than 1,000 possible changes before choosing Guardians. Team owner Paul Dolan said, quote, "We are excited to usher in the next era of the deep history of baseball in Cleveland. Cleveland has, and always will be, the most important part of our identity. Therefore, we wanted a name that strongly represents the pride, resiliency, and loyalty of Clevelanders," end quote. Cleveland retired its Chief Wahoo logo from team uniforms 3 years ago. Chief Wahoo was an offensive caricature of a Native American and was used from 1951 through 2018. National Congress of American Indians President Fawn Sharp called the name change another important step in healing the harms the team's former mascot caused Native people, especially Native youth. The Guardians will retain its colors. Many other Native Americans and supporters have applauded the announced name change. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland, the first Native American cabinet secretary, called this a, quote, "welcome and necessary change," end quote. Crystal Echo Hawk is the founder of Illuminative, an initiative created and led by Natives to challenge the negative narrative that surrounds Native communities. She said this proves sports teams can eliminate harmful names and mascots, and called this a major step towards righting the wrongs committed against Native peoples, as well as one step towards justice. The choice of the Guardians' name comes from Cleveland's architectural history, according to CNN. The Guardians of Traffic are large statues on the bridge connecting the city's east and west sides. Guardians is the fifth name in the franchise's 120-year history. Team owner Dolan added, quote, "We are all Cleveland Guardians," end quote. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
A new report shows federal investment in turning 30 million homes solar could mean big savings and job growth for communities. Emily Scott brings us this report from Colorado.
What would it look like if one in four households in the country was solar-powered? A new report from the 30 Million Solar Homes campaign says solar federal investment of that size would be equivalent to taking 42 million cars off the road for a year. It would also lead to creation of 1.7 million jobs focused on rooftop and community solar installations. Report co-author Katie Keenbaum says the policy recommendations also focus on addressing racial inequity in the nation's energy system. It prioritizes solar power for low-income and marginalized communities, which Keenbaum says would help reduce utility costs in the long term.
If we want to see these benefits in communities across the country, in, you know, all different income levels, we need to make sure that we are intentionally investing in those communities and not just hoping that the benefits of clean energy will trickle down to all of us.
The report also calls for increased funding for programs like the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program and the Weatherization Assistance Program. It says in Colorado, the impact of more solar power would mean $1 billion in electric bill savings over 5 years. Jennifer Holloway heads the Craig Chamber of Commerce in northwestern Colorado's Yampa Valley, where three mines and two coal-fired power plants are major employers. They're scheduled to close by 2030, which Holloway says means the community needs to find a way to pivot its economy. The town was connected to a solar co-op in the Yampa Valley last year, which drew residents' interest. Holloway says the job potential of solar could be beneficial to Craig.
The more we can be independent, the better chance we have of keeping our community together. With this job loss coming up, we're a family-oriented community, so we really do want to stay together. Solar is one of the tools that we can use to create a stronger community.
She adds there are plans to expand the solar co-op in 2022 to include nearby Rio Blanco County. I'm Emily Scott with Colorado News Connection.
Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Advocates for Conserving Marine Life have filed a petition with the U.S. Secretary of Commerce urging action to protect North Atlantic right whales from vertical fishing lines. A new survey finds widespread public support for government protection of right whales. Lily Bulkey has more.
A new survey finds widespread public support up and down the East Coast for protecting right whales from getting tangled up in fishing gear, specifically the vertical lines that connect lobster and crab traps from the sea floor to the surface. 9 in 10 East Coast residents surveyed think it's important that the government protect right whales, according to Catherine Duell with the Pew Charitable Trusts, the nonprofit that released the poll.
The North Atlantic right whale is a species that is currently in crisis. It is a critically endangered species, and there are only about 350 individual right whales left swimming in our waters.
Duell adds more than 70% of respondents support closing high-risk areas for whales to certain fishing gear, and nearly 90% support fishermen using gear that doesn't harm whales, which is becoming more widely available. She says these solutions can allow right whales and fishermen to coexist, and her group is among those that filed an emergency action petition with the U.S. Secretary of Commerce. Ben Hellerstein is with Environment Massachusetts, which also joined the petition. He adds there have been 34 confirmed deaths of right whales in U.S. and Canadian waters in the last 4 years. And he says even when whales don't die, getting caught up in vertical lines can cause them major stress.
Scientists actually believe that it is one of the causes of declining birth rates among the right whale population. This sort of stress of these encounters is actually making it harder for them to reproduce.
Hellerstein adds there's something about North Atlantic right whales that resonates with people.
These animals are gentle giants. They grow to be about the size of a school bus, and yet they feed almost entirely off of these, you know, small crustaceans.
The emergency action petition recommends prohibiting fishing with vertical lines in a few specific locations with the highest likelihood of right whale entanglement, 1 year-long closure south of Martha's Vineyard in Nantucket, and 5 seasonal closures off the coast of Maine. Support for this reporting was provided by the Pew Charitable Trusts. This is Lily Bulkey with Commonwealth News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators for transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
An invasive, drought-tolerant grass is spreading across the Sonoran Desert in Arizona, and it's increasing the risk of wildfires that destroy the cactuses there. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Perhaps nothing is a more iconic symbol of the American Southwest than the giant saguaro cactus.
Especially during peak time of sunrise or sunsets, the silhouettes cast this human-like shape across the canyons, across the deserts, into the horizon.
Melissa Bowman is a volunteer for Saguaro National Park in Arizona. To protect the cacti, she's been helping remove invasive bufflegrass from the park. This drought-resistant grass is spreading across the landscape and crowding out saguaros.
It's competing for resources, it's competing for water, it's competing for nutrients.
The dry grass also provides fuel for dangerous wildfires, which may become more common as the climate warms.
If there's huge swaths of bufflegrass carrying the fire, you will see large volumes of area just being absolutely destroyed by fire.
After a fire tears across the landscape, the bufflegrass will regrow quickly, but saguaros may struggle to return. So Bowman and her peers are dedicated to removing the bufflegrass. She says it requires difficult manual labor, but she hopes her work helps the saguaros and other native plants survive and thrive. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, July 23rd, 2021. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and Emma Grillo. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Lily Bolke, Emily Scott, Mary Sherman, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Sam Bowman. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are made possible by support from our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. That's KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines.
You are tuned to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, a June New York Times article about female Asian American and Pacific Islander golfers reacting to the recent spike in anti-Asian bias began inauspiciously. Quote, players of Asian descent have won 8 of the past 10 women's PGA championships, but there is nothing cookie cutter about the winners, close quote. It sort of reads like a TikTok challenge. Tell me you assume your readership is white without telling me